Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Beyond the Deal podcast, which is that name sticking? Are we liking that name?
What's Beyond the Deal with Ben is the official one, just to differentiate. But sure. I think, yeah, we're sticking with it. It is Beyond the Deal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are involved.
Well, I think that, and there's a lot of conversations that are happening between people right now on how to make a lot of money and, you know, how to become successful and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, just being at the point that I'm at, you know, I'm actually looking beyond that too. And I'm sort of looking back at all the stuff that I went through and sort of what might be impactful for people. You know, certainly there's a lot of tactical stuff that we'll go over on how to make a lot of money. But also I think equally as important is sort of making sure that the rest of your life and what you're actually doing with your money and your career and the direction of your life that makes sense for you. See, a lot of people don't stop to sort of sit in it.
So when you think of Beyond the Deal, you think of like forward vision. When I think of Beyond the Deal, veins pop out. Like I visualize all these different avenues and veins that go into a deal. Mm-hmm. That's what I visualize as it representing is the nuances of people and history and life experiences and mistakes and wins and like exploring all of that and personalities. And there's a deal and there's a transaction, but there's so much more.
Yeah.
There's a web.
Well, that's what I think is interesting about how brains work. So mine is very analytical. And so I hear like, beyond. I'm like, well, that is, you know, beyond. That's the next thing.
Oh, I think of underneath and sideways. And
yeah. No, my brain isn't creative like that. It's very like tactical.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder what other people think of when they hear Beyond the Deal.
Yeah. Tell us what you think, yo.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today?
Okay. So today, so it is the end of January.
Yep.
Feels like spring market is on the horizon. Things are starting to go down. Houses are starting to like be prepared for the spring market. And we talk a lot about like in the office, spring market, spring market, spring market. And something that's been coming up a lot is the situation of having to sell and buy, like Pedro, sell to buy.
Yep.
And that's a reality for a lot of people. It's a reality for me when my husband and I bought our first home, we sold our condo in Dorchester. Mm-hmm. And Pedro talks to, I mean, how many contacts does he make a day?
I mean, when he's on his stuff, he's like 75, 80 contacts a day.
He talks to so many people.
Yep.
And he was saying it comes up a lot. Like I would have to sell to buy. Mm-hmm. And it just creates a little bit of friction for people to move forward, even though it might be the right thing. It just seems complicated and overwhelming and in some ways like a house of cards. Like it all has to work out.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to explore that. So just to preface this conversation, I am so inexperienced in this. I'm not a realtor. I'm not – like I'm in this office, so I'm getting exposed to a lot, but it's all new and I've only bought one home.
Yep.
In my life.
Yeah.
And it's the home I'm currently in. I moved into the home that the condo my husband already owned. We sold that together and bought. So I've only
done this. Was he in Rentham?
No. What do you mean?
When where was he living?
No.
Where did he own a condo?
We lived in Dorchester, Savin Hill.
Yes. Okay.
We bought both my daughter's home to a condo, like a, what is it? A townhome.
Yep.
In Dorchester. That he had bought when he was 26 with his brother. He co-owned it. And then we bought his brother out when we got married. And then, I've got to work on my ums. But I just caught myself. We bought his brother out, owned it, lived there for, married for 4 years. And then after my second child, it was like, get me out of here.
Do you guys ever think about like wishing you kept it?
Oh, yeah.
All the time, right?
And
I've only sold one home. I bought a lot, but I've only sold one and I still wish I kept it. It was the first house that Colleen.
Oh yeah.
Well,
in Mansfield.
In Mansfield. Yeah. I love that house.
Go buy it.
I wish I could buy it back. I'd go back there.
Would you?
After I saw my gas bill last month, I was like, I might need a smaller motherfucking house.
I know. So yes, of course, but we were newlyweds 4 years in. And two little girls,
Well, hindsight too, when you look at something like that, at the time, interest rates were probably still a little bit higher. The rents weren't nearly what they could be right now. The expectation that,
We felt like we needed the capital.
You felt like you did, but you didn't.
You're right. Yeah. You're probably right. But having more debt than having way more debt exposure felt very scary.
Well, I think one of the issues right now is that there's a lot of people that do feel like with interest rates where they are, that they're going to keep their house versus selling it because, you know, where are you going to borrow money at 2.5% again? Mm-hmm. And if you've got a $300,000 or $400,000 condo and it cash flows, or a small house and it cash flows because your interest rates are low and the rent is so high that you're just going to rent it out.
Right.
And so that just puts, again, even more pressure on inventory. But again, we could talk about that.
I mean,
that
yeah,
all
you're
start long.
You're going you're yeah. yeah, you're getting so just to also go back to you are super experienced in you how many times have you gone
just
through
in general,
a transaction?
You can leave it at that. You're just super experienced. Just stop there.
And that was a wrap. I hope y'all enjoyed this episode.
If you've taken away anything, it's just that I am super experienced.
Yeah. DM Ben, he's super experienced. Mm-hmm. So how many times have you done a transaction or gone through a deal or a client where they had to sell in order to buy? How many times in your
career?
Yeah,
I mean, it's probably 25% of the time. Like somebody has to sell to buy.
So
maybe even more.
Does it intimidate you? I mean,
no.
The thought of it.
No. And so you started off the thing with a lot of folks are sort of getting ready to sell because at least up here in New England, and I know, you know, sort of every geographic location has different times. You know, Florida has a sort of different height of selling season than we do here in New England. But coming out of the winter into the spring to move then in the summer and get settled before the fall is like ideal for most people.
Yes. I mean, it's school calendar. It's a lot of it's school.
Yep. And, but also it's not like people just don't want to, like, you don't want to have to pack your house up right now and move in the middle of the winter. Mm-hmm. Right. So ideally, it's not that transactions don't happen all year long, but ideally you want to sort of stick to the spring mm-hmm. to sell in the best case scenario if you have that flexibility. Mm-hmm. That's also where we see the most buy and sell because that's typically people that are sort of getting ready to increase the size of their home or downsize and take advantage of the spring market. So there's a lot of that going on. But when people have to buy to sell, they're going to have, there's a lot of different iterations of the options that they have, but realistically they have four options when you're looking to, you own a house, you want to sell it and you want to go and buy something else.
Okay.
Okay.
What are those options? I think that's great to start with like defining it.
So and all of them are a level of risk, you know, that you take on and then, you know, sort of managing the risk versus the reward and all that kind of stuff. But if you want to go directly from your current home to a new home and you have to sell the home because of financing and you want to take the equity, then really you can work with an agent to put your property on the market and find a buyer that's willing to wait for you to find your next home.
Okay.
Okay. So I want to sell my house. You, Lauren, want to come and buy it. I would say to you, Lauren, I'd love to sell you my home, but you need to wait until I find suitable housing. And if I can't find suitable housing, then unfortunately I can't sell you the home. If you do that and you go that route, do you say route or route?
I say route.
Do you? I'll go with it. Route. If you go that route.
Route.
That doesn't sound right. It
that's
doesn't
sound right southern. For me. Route.
All right. So if you go that route, I think what you're doing is potentially, and I'm not saying 100% of the time, but you, Lauren, as somebody, as a buyer that's willing to wait for me to find suitable housing, you may or may not be the one who's going to pay top price. Because if you, Lauren, want to buy my house and you're moving into the area and you have to move in 6 weeks, or the house is good, but it's not perfect, but I'd buy it. But if you take 2 months to find suitable housing and then you don't, and you come to me and say, hey, listen, I'm sorry, you got to go find another house. Now you've lost out on 2 months of arguably the best time of the year to buy a house.
Yes.
It's a big risk.
You're leaving a lot on the table. Like I'm going to want to pay less for that because that's, yeah.
It's so you're using as a seller of a home, you're using some of the leverage to get conditions versus price, right? So that's one option. The other option is to try to find a seller of a home that's willing to wait for you to sell a home.
I feel like that's more common. Do you feel like that's more common?
In this market. Okay. And it all is market driven on which one of those you give up more leverage. Because if you go now, if I go to a seller and I say, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, really love your home. I know it's competitive, but here's a great offer. But you do have to wait until I sell the home, my existing home. And if I can't sell my existing home, then unfortunately I have to back out and you have to find another buyer. So there's a certain amount of risk that a seller takes on with a contingent home sale contingent buyer. Now, in a market where there's multiple offers, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 offers on a property.
Which is now.
If you come in with a home sale contingency, the odds that you get your offer accepted are very low.
Okay.
Because think about the condition where if it's a competitive home and they have 10 offers, in all likelihood, lots of those offers are not contingent on the sale of any other property. And so how much more would you as a buyer need to pay a seller if I came to you and you had a, let's say, an $800,000 house and all of your offers were $800,000 and less. But I said, hey, listen, Lauren, I've got to sell this house, but I'll pay you $850,000. Now you sit back and you go, okay, I know there's risk, but if it works out, I get 50 grand.
Okay.
Right? So in the first instance, you're going to sell your home to a buyer who's potentially going to pay less, or you go and you make an offer on a home where you potentially will have to pay more in order to get that contingency, because either way, you're giving up leverage on the negotiating table to get a condition versus a price.
You carry a condition. So you've got to adjust for that.
That sounds so weird. You carry a condition.
I mean, it's true. It's like, I can't. So those are two options.
So those are two options. Not great options, but we make them work all the time. So,
okay.
So I'll come back to, like, if you have to be in one of those two conditions, what can you do to, you know, to give up as little leverage as possible, yes, with that condition so that hopefully you don't have to sacrifice that much on price. Mm-hmm. So I can come back to that. But the third option is, and we see this more often these days with folks that don't have the financial flexibility. So third one is, you could get if you can qualify.
Yes.
You could potentially make an offer that's not contingent on the sale of your home, because the bank would approve you to purchase the next home without the sale. And there's different financial, like, loan programs that will allow you to do it. Some will use the equity of your current home.
Yes.
Some will, like, you could go and get an equity line and pull cash out of your home to help with the down payment. But you just have to make sure that the lender doesn't have any issues about debt ratio. Mm-hmm. Because you're, like, you have a $2,000 mortgage payment and then you have a $500 equity line payment. And then your new payment on your new house is $5,000. Now all of that debt needs to be taken into consideration when they give you the approval.
Yes.
If you can get that approved, what it does is it gives you flexibility. And that flexibility looks like, hey, listen, Mr. or Mrs. Seller, I'd like to make you an offer at $800,000 to match the rest of the other offers.
Okay.
I'm going to be a great buyer. I've got a great agent. Will you accept? There's no contingency. Mm-hmm. Now, you as the buyer may say, hey, listen, instead of a 6-week closing, can we have an 8-week closing? And they go, well, why? And you go, well, what I'd love to do if it works out is sell my home and have it sell on the same day. And that just gives me 2 weeks. But understand that if I can't sell my home in 2 weeks and I can't close on time, I've got this financing over here that says, hey, you can buy without selling, mm-hmm, right? It allows you to make offers that are non-contingent. And if you can line everything up so your home is ready to sell the day you go under contract on your new home, in all likelihood, especially in this market where homes are flying off the table, you can line it up so that you could have concurrent closings and you don't even need to do any creative financing. You can use all the equity of your home sale towards the purchase.
You didn't take on any additional, like, you aren't carrying all this debt.
Well, that's why the equity line is great, because then you have the funds available, but you're not paying on it. Because mm-hmm, it's not like, so that's a home equity line of credit. Instead of, like, just going to the bank and saying, hey, can I have 200 grand from the equity in my house?
Yes.
And they give you the 200 grand and then you're getting charged 8% on it.
Yes.
You just get a line of credit. So, like, right now I have a line of credit on my house. I have a zero balance on it, so I'm not paying any interest on it. But tomorrow I could go get a couple hundred grand from equity in my house.
It's so, so this sounds like a great option. I like option number three. If you can manage it, but I, you know, home equity, a HELOC, right? Mm-hmm. It has like a bad, like it financially, it seems like, oh, you have to get a HELOC. Like that doesn't seem, it seems like a bad option, but is that because of just our grandparents, like, and our parents, and that meant that you weren't managing your money well? Instead of just being sophisticated with it?
I mean, everything is assets and liabilities, in my opinion. And again, we started this podcast saying that I'm more analytical than sort of creative. But to me, it's all just assets. So you have equity in your home that you can use to accomplish a goal. Mm-hmm. And the risk is relatively low, right? Because you're only using that equity to fund something where you're going to sell the house and pay that loan and that debt off within a reasonable period of time. So when I talk to folks who are considering this option, I tell them, listen, worst case scenario, what's worst case scenario? So the seller accepts your offer, you put your home on the market, you either don't sell it right away or you sell it right away and the deal falls apart halfway through.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
That sounds awful, right? So that's worst case scenario. What is the reality of worst case scenario is that you have to buy that other home, which means you need to leverage the equity in your current home. And you likely will have two mortgage payments for the most a month or two. So $2,000 existing mortgage payment plus a $500 equity line, you've got $2,500 per month extra on top of your new mortgage. Mm-hmm. Now, your new mortgage is just sort of like that's in your budget already. So worst case scenario, it's $5,000. Mm-hmm. Most people, when they look at these options, if they have the financial flexibility to do it, you're going to lose way more money making the sale of your home contingent on suitable housing or making an offer subject to the sale of your home. Either way,
you're leaving a lot on the table.
$5,000 is a bargain compared to how much price you'll lose on either end of that if it's contingent.
Okay.
So that to me is less risky than going subject to.
Okay.
Fourth option, which again preserves the ability for you to get top dollar on the sale of your home and have the most leverage on the purchase of your home if you don't have the flexibility, is to sell, rent, and then buy. So if you, like, we see this a lot with first-time home buyers who sometimes maybe they have a kid, maybe they don't have kids, all that kind of stuff, right? I'm going to sell my condo, I'm going to go live with my in-laws, or yeah, I'm going to go and rent, and then I'll start looking for a house because then I can buy, I've already sold, I have the equity in my hand, and now I can make an offer non-contingent.
You can put it to work for that year.
Mm-hmm. And you don't even need, it's not even a year. You know, you could get into a temporary housing situation. You could, you know, find somebody that's got some flexibility in sort of the rental term. Mm-hmm. But what that does is, again, allows you to sell and get the most equity and be, you know, the most competitive on the offer side when you're looking to buy a house. So those are the four main options when I sit down and I talk to folks. And some of that depends on financial flexibility. Some of it depends, you know, if I'm sitting down with a family of five and they've got three young kids and they don't have family locally, like selling their home, packing up their entirety of their house and then going into a rental in order to get into a new home is like that's an overwhelming sort of like
situation. That's not something you would necessarily present as like best option.
Not best option. I would absolutely present it.
Oh.
But the odds that, because again, like my goal is not to make a decision for a client. It's simply to give them the information that allows them to make an educated one.
Yeah.
Right. And so I am going to present to everybody and through a conversation that sort of marries their motivation, their risk tolerance, their financial flexibility, and then what their buy sell probabilities are. When you marriage all of that together, usually there's one option that makes the most amount of sense. And it makes sense because the other options, the better options, aren't an option.
Okay.
Right. So if you don't have the financial flexibility and you don't have in-laws or you can't like go into a rental, then you really have two options. And out of those options in this market, there's one that's better than the other.
Because the market is part of the piece. And what I'm hearing is like, it's like a puzzle to put it together. You have all these pieces on the table. You have the market. Is there more sellers than buyers? And then you have what's your family situation? You have what's your financial situation? What's your risk tolerance based on your past experiences and your financial goals? So you have all these factors or puzzle pieces that go into this decision. And you have one client, you have one vision, one picture that you're trying to get to. And it's just matching all those options to the one client.
It's presenting all of the options to the one client and assist them in making a decision that's best for them.
And I've heard you say that agents are a guide a lot.
Yep.
And yeah, so I...
Well, and you see it all the time. So, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but like a lot of agents feel like it's their responsibility to tell clients what to do. Right. Even in the middle of a negotiation, an agent would say, well, I would never let my client do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, unfortunately, it's not your decision to let a client do something or not. It's their decision. Right. But a lot of agents feel like they have this responsibility to make decisions for their clients and or shield different options. And the third one is just we have a lot of real estate agents that just don't know. Like if you sat down and said, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Agent, what are the options if I'm looking to buy or sell? Likely they would come up with like two, which is like, well, you have to, you have to sell first or you have to make the offer contingent on the sale of your home. Okay. So it's like, usually they just don't know all of the intricacies of the different options that are available.
Do you feel like that comes with experience? Do you feel like that comes with just the agent's knowledge, whether it's experience-based or just studying the market and the financial vehicles out there?
I think best case scenario is that you've got the education that allows you to analyze those decisions, but you've also got the experience to know what happens when each of those options do come up. Because even if you look at it like, all right, so you have to, let's say you want to secure your next home in order and then make it subject to the sale of your existing
home. Before you displace yourself, yeah.
Right? So that sounds great on the surface. It's like, all right, well, we'll make an offer. And that's what most agents do. They go, okay, well, we'll just show you houses and then we'll make an offer.
That's what we did.
Right. And then once we get your home under contract, your new home under contract, then we'll go and we'll sell your current homes. That sound good? Great. All right, well, we'll set you up on an automatic search and then you start making offers and you make offers and they get denied and you make offers and they get denied and you make offers and they get denied and you were understand, like you were like, what the heck is going on, right? We have to just... And the agent says, well, it's just the market and we're facing a lot of competition. Well, the reality is that there's a lot that can be done to increase the odds that a seller accepts your offer. So what does that look like? Number one, have you chosen an agent that has good relationships with other agents in the community that you're looking to buy? There is a big difference if I come up to an agent in the town of Mansfield, where I sell a ton of property and I have a great reputation and great relationships with other agents. There's a much higher likelihood that if I bring them an offer and I say, hey, Lauren, if you're the offer, I say, hey, Lauren, I've got a client that's interested in purchasing her home. It is subject to the sale of their home. But understand, Lauren, I've already staged the home. I've got the photos ready. It is Monday. If you accept our offer tonight, their home is ready to go on the market on Tuesday.
Okay.
I need 7 days to put this property under contract. Here's what we're listing it for. And I know we can get that price because I just sold this house, and this house last year. And they give us an indication we're pricing it $25,000 below that, which means we're almost guaranteed to get multiple offers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different scenario than they email you an offer that says it's subject to suitable housing and you give no other context.
Okay.
So you, Lauren, as the listing agent, now you go to the seller and you say, hey, listen, Ben's got an offer. It is subject to the sale of this buyer's home.
But
here's X, Y, and Z. And
of why I'm confident.
And they're going to give you an extra $5,000 or $10,000 for the house, right? That's a much different scenario.
Yeah.
So even within all of these different options, right, there's so many different scenarios that may work, right? You have a really risk tolerant, which I am. I am fairly risk tolerant.
Okay.
I've had clients before that say, hey, listen, I really want this house. Let's make it work. And I said, well, if you really want to be competitive, but you don't want to way overpay, but you're confident that your home will sell, just give them a non-refundable deposit. So now I come and I say, hey, Lauren, I've got a great client. We need to sell their home. I understand that this is an additional risk, but we're so confident that we can get this home sold in time to close on your property that we're going to put a $50,000 deposit down. If we don't sell the home and we have to cancel the deal and not purchase, you get to keep $50,000. So now the seller says, well, shit, almost best case scenario is I go under contract. They don't sell their home. I keep 50 grand.
Or.
And then yeah. I resell the property and I actually sell my home for like 50 grand more than I would have otherwise.
I like if I was an agent, I couldn't do that. Like I that's why I wouldn't be good. I would.
But you could.
I would assume the risk for the client.
But you would if you were confident. If you had the experience and the confidence to know that in all likelihood that situation works out perfectly. And if it doesn't, listen, I'm not making that decision. So it's not like I'm going to my client and saying, hey, listen, here's the way to get this property and this is exactly what you should do.
Does that confidence and that ability to just present the offers just come with time and experience for the agent?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Were you like that in the beginning?
I think that I probably displayed confidence, even though I didn't have it. Like personally, I didn't feel confident, but I was like, fake it until you make it. So outwardly, I would appear very, very confident, even though internally, I'm not sure that the confidence that people saw was the confidence that I felt in myself. I think the best case scenario, I think that's a good way to do it if you don't have the confidence yet or the experience yet. I think the best case scenario is you have both, you know, because I genuinely, like, I'm not attached to the outcome. Obviously, I'm working extraordinarily hard, but I know that the outcome is going to be the outcome, and I'm going to put forth the consistent effort to help my clients accomplish their goals. It's not like I'm over-promising and under-delivering.
Mm-hmm.
I am promising and delivering on what I promise.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works out perfectly, then great. And if it doesn't, I have done everything in my power to make it happen.
And I bet, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I bet there were times where you're like, I can't believe that worked out. That was so stressful. It almost didn't happen. And I'm never going to put myself in that situation again. And here's how. And I'm going to make sure that before we do a contingent offer, we have the house ready to go. And I'm going to start telling people that. So you learn along the way and you say, that worked out, but it almost didn't. And I'm going to resolve that and plan ahead.
Yeah, I think that goes for anything though, right? Like that's one of those things where that's how confidence is sort of determined, is by trial and error and success. And sometimes, like you said, you learn more from failure than you do from success. Right?
Have you ever had something fail, like a transaction that was contingent?
Never. I've never failed at anything, actually.
Do you have any like, you know, horror stories or?
I was asking Sandy about it earlier and I don't remember. I don't honestly, it perhaps could have happened. I've put properties on the market that haven't sold before. It's been a long time because of the market, but it used to be that, you know, that you'd get a dozen showings over 6 months when you were trying to sell a home because there was 10 buyers for the year and you had 40, 50 homes for sale in that market.
So different than now. How long ago was that?
Before 2014. Before 14.
What? Which one did you like better? I mean, right now there's no inventory, so you have to fight tooth and nail to get the 6 homes that are coming up, either for listing or buying. But then there were less buyers. Which is it? All balanced out? It's all good and bad, or which one do you like better?
I personally, as a primarily a listing agent, I prefer this market.
Okay.
Yeah. But I will say that a market where it takes more skill to sell a home and perhaps more time to sell a home, there's a flight towards quality of agent versus just listing with anybody, because almost anybody can put a property on the market right now and have it sell. Now, they might not make the experience as good or they might not get top dollar. But also, it's not like you can sell your home with 2 different agents at the same time and determine how much more you can get with one agent. So even if you get through and you don't get top dollar, you don't know that you didn't get top dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can have the experience that it was an awful experience and take that with you, but then that sale is done and you can't go back and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
The next time you do it, you may have a flight towards more quality of an agent. But in the moment, you can't sort of experience both at the same time.
That's true that you say. It's interesting. The lower the inventory of houses,
mm-hmm.
it seems to be like an influx of agents, because it makes it – the transaction is going to happen because there's such a low inventory, where if you have a ton of inventory, only the good agents stick around because it's that much more competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it more has to do – I think the agency count and all that kind of stuff has more to do with the – the volume of business that's done versus how it's done. Because even back then, we had way more sales than we have now. Like, even when there was 40 houses on the market, like, people were still moving around at a much greater clip than they are right now.
Life still happens, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the number of home sales is the biggest impediment to, you know, success in real estate right now. It's not prices or inventory levels. Inventory obviously contributes to the number of homes that we can sell. But last year alone, we had, I think in the United States, we had just over 4 million real estate sales. When you compare that to 2021, when there was over 6 million real estate sales. And that's in a time period where the last time, Jared James was talking about this the other day, and I forget the exact statistics. I wish I had a Jamie like on.
I could, we have a Sandy.
Yeah.
I mean, I can pull it up. Well, I can be, what's it, Jamie?
So it was something like the last time that real estate sales were, the number of real estate sales were this low, there was some obnoxiously less number of citizens, like, people in the United States. So it was
home sales at lowest in 30 years.
Right. But if you look at the population back when that happened, it was like a percentage less. It was like we had 30% fewer, a lower population. So we have way more people, but we have the same number of sales. What is the number?
Yes, 200. Okay. Here, I'll play it.
Yeah, Jared James, if you're not following him on social media, he's awesome.
I don't know how to get back into.
That's what it ends up coming down to, way more than, you know, whether the market's good or bad, because real estate agents can sort of survive in any market. I was really fortunate to sort of cut my teeth and learn this business in one of the worst markets that will probably go down in history, which was that 2008 financial crisis.
Yes.
But homes were still selling at that point.
And right? remind people like what happened.
Well, I mean, so the financial crisis back in 2008 with the stock market crashed and we went into a depression, you know, home sales, generally speaking, went down about 40%. So people who bought in 2006, which was very common, the market was flying. And that's when I started my real estate career here in Mansfield.
So you were just like,
I was like,
bang, bang, bang.
Yeah. That first year I did a ton of business that first year. Second year I was like, okay. And then third year, just the bottom dropped out. And so, you know,
everybody froze.
Right. And people were buying back then. People were buying homes for like $700,000-$800,000, which was a lot of money back then. Mm-hmm. And then like within a year and a half, 2 years, all of a sudden the value of their home went down $200,000. And that's what started the whole like bank owned and foreclosed industry.
Yep.
Because everybody was underwater and then they just stopped paying their bills because the depression, you know, lost jobs or, you know, again, you're sitting in a home that's worth $800,000. You put 5% down on a loan and now it's worth $600,000. Like a lot of people just made a business decision. They're like, I'm just going to give it back to the bank.
So you went through that mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3 and you could almost equate that to 21, 22, your 2024. Like it was the height. People were buying.
See, I was ready for prices to go down. I was almost, I don't want to say I was looking forward to it, but I was like looking forward to it because there would have been a flight towards quality of agent. It would have been harder to sell a home.
But
if prices are going down, it would have been harder to sell a home, which means that for what I do, which is primarily listing houses, it would have been, hey, listen, we're having a hard time selling our home. We need more of an expert. Like the agent who has 2-3 home sales that does it part-time, that, you know, that sort of thing, like it's going to be harder for them to get a house.
You could say the same now, though. Everything's so expensive. People and the interest rates are so intimidating I get it, that it is that much harder to sell a home because it just seems like a stickier situation.
I would argue that buyers who are purchasing should be much more discerning about the agent that they choose than the sale of their home. I know it sounds crazy, but not that you shouldn't be on either, but if you're going to be one or the other, like having a buyer's agent who actually knows what they're doing and structuring an offer and having great relationships with other real estate agents and knowing how to, you know, present. Like we get offers all the time. Like we got, I think we got 13 offers on, you know, that three family that we put on the market.
Yeah.
Ashley got, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 offers on her single family that went on the market.
Yes.
Right. So we see offers like constantly. Every week we're looking at 20, 30 different agents that are submitting offers on our properties. And it is astonishing, sort of the lack of quality in the offers that are presented. It's like, you know, missing information, multiple PDFs, like no rhyme or reason. You know, we've got 13 offers on a property and somebody offers 5% less than list price. It just like, it's astonishing. So again, just going back to like buy, sell, because I know we got like,
no,
way
I
off
mean,
of
it's
that
all
topic,
part of but... it. It's all part of it. So you're like, that's part of it. If you're going to have a buy, you need to have, if you're going to be buying a home and selling yours, you want to have your agent presenting the best offer to make sure it all works.
Yep. But there's also a strategy if you need to, like, let's say you need to buy a home and then sell yours. There's also a strategy of like, listen, you're going to have to sacrifice something. You're either going to have to sacrifice and way overpay to be competitive, mm-hmm. or you're going to have to go after something that's potentially less desirable. And the best thing for people that need to sell in order to buy,
yes.
is when another seller way overprices their property.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it won't sell.
Okay.
They're illustrating that the
even
sales
now with
price,
the inventory so low.
Yeah, there's properties that sit on the market. It's rare, but you can overprice a house, and if you do, that illustrates that seller's main priority is price. And if it's price, you can give them price, and you can get conditions. So a house sits on the market, say it's $800,000. It's really worth $750,000. House right. sits on the market for 2-3 weeks, and you come in as a buyer, and you say, "Mr. or Mrs. Seller, I'll pay you $775,000, fully knowing, because you've got a quality real estate agent, that the house probably would sell for $750,000 easily, right? Maybe it'll sell for $760,000, maybe it'll sell for $775,000, but you go, you know what, I'll pay you $775,000. But here's the deal. I'll give you a price, but you give me terms. I need 2 weeks to sell my home, subject to suitable housing.
So then your contingency isn't actually that bad anymore. Like, it's not a demerit to you.
Well, it is. I think that it is because potentially, but that seller is illustrating that they have an inflated value of their home. I don't think then at that point you can go, I'll give you $750,000 and, you know, subject to the sale of my home.
Okay.
Because then the seller just says, no, that might work.
Oh, but they're showing you what they value.
Right.
Which is the dollar.
And now you might sit there and in all likelihood you present, I'll give you $750,000 subject to the sale of my home. The seller says, well, if I wanted $750,000, I just dropped the price to $750,000 and I know it would sell.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's happened to me where I'm representing a seller. We go after top price or over market value. And a buyer comes in and says, well, I'll pay you this amount of money plus subject to all of these terms and conditions. And I'm like, well, like if we were willing to sell it at that price, we would just lower it to that price and get a nice clean offer.
With no contingencies. Right.
So it's not that you don't have to give up anything, but the seller is out there saying that price is most important when they overprice. And you can take advantage of that. So when we talk to buyers and we're coaching them, we say, hey, listen, opportunities that other people have already passed up on and inventory that's sitting on the market is perfect to go after.
Mm.
Now, you might need to overpay for it. It might not be in the perfect neighborhood. It might not. So there's all these levers of like what is most important to you. If you have to make the move and you want to make it, but you're not competitive, you keep submitting offers and they're not accepted and you can't sell your home first, maybe that's another option. You go and you try to secure a buyer that's willing to pay you top dollar and give you time. But that still requires you to submit an offer that says, hey, even though it's under contract, my offer is still subject on this property closing, which elevates the risk. Not as much as something that's not under agreement yet, but it does elevate the risk.
This is all just wild to me. Like it all seems very complicated. But if I were to sit across from like coming as a potential client, you would target me as someone who wants simplicity. Probably. And you would present me with, you know, all the offers, but know that I would pick the simplest one. And I think it's like people are complicated, situations are complicated, and then you add in complex financial like levers and options, and I would get overwhelmed.
You wouldn't. So this is I think this is the big thing that perhaps consumers and maybe even real estate agents don't understand. But it's not when you're working with somebody that's confident in what they do and really knowledgeable and has the experience
of the market, the financial vehicles, the narrative, all of it,
the totality of it,
the totality,
if I sit down with you and Paul and went through the options and you said, hey, listen, we feel really overwhelmed. We need to sell to buy. We don't know what to do. I would sit down and through a series of questions, I would find out what you and Paul have as options, right? I'd explain the pluses and minuses of those options based on those and your motivation and market conditions in your house and what you're looking for and the timeline that you're looking to accomplish everything. Then really these things fall down to like one or two different scenarios. And sometimes it's dependent on the property that you want to go after. Some of it is dependent on what happens if you try to sell your home subject to finding suitable housing. Mm-hmm. Some of those things pivot and change around. But yeah. I think the biggest thing is that when you're sitting across from the table with somebody that has a lot of confidence and knowledge and skill in the area in which you need that, that person can put you at ease. And I think that that's the biggest sort of feedback that we've started to get over the last 5 or 6 years as we've sort of paid way more attention to customer service and the experience of our clients, is that like you don't need to quarterback this thing. Like, that's my job. Mm. Here are all of the different options. Now, at the end of the day, you're the boss, you make the final decision.
Mm.
But I'm going to lay out all of the decisions that you have to make in a very clear and concise way, so that making the decision is really just the end result of a really good conversation.
That first conversation and multiple ones as they go through.
I think that, yeah. And listen, things change.
You say you're so analytical and you're like, you try to find the solution. But to be an agent, like, you do have to be creative. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces. It's almost like a mosaic, not a puzzle. You do have to be creative.
Well, I love like those, you know, those wooden puzzles where you need to put like a square with a bunch of different pieces inside of a triangle, or like you have to fit certain things into a board, you know, those types of puzzles, not like a Ravensburger. I enjoy those too, but I love those. I love looking at a situation and, okay, so there's all these different options about trying to put this thing together, but what's the last piece that has to go in? Okay. Determine this is the last piece that goes in, and then you build it from the back up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do here. What's the goal? What's the end result? So the end result is you sell your home, you buy the next home, you either have the financial flexibility to do creative financing or you don't. You have the financial, or you have the flexibility to go into temporary housing, or you have the tolerance to go and rent something, or you don't. And then here's what you're looking for. Here's what you have to sell. It's super confident that we can sell this quickly. Let's get it ready and then we'll buy. If the house that you're selling is sort of unique or rare, or you're going to want a price that is above market value, then maybe we got to go to market first, because we got to make sure we can get that price. Because if your home is worth $550,000 and you can only make this move if you sell it for $600,000,
yeah,
then you've got to put the property on the market and make sure that you can get $600,000. Now, when I come through the door, I'm going to tell you what the likelihood of getting that $600,000. If I don't believe that we can, then I'm going to very clearly tell you that. Now, you may decide to either digest that, accept it, and move on, and we go in full well knowing what we're going to do. Or you may decide to find somebody who tells you what you want to hear, and that may work out or it doesn't. I've been wrong before. But again, what I promise my clients is that I'm going to just be honest and upfront with them. I'm not going to tell them what they want to hear. I'm going to tell them what I truly believe. That doesn't mean that I can't be wrong, but they're always going to hear the truth.
Yeah, you're going to tell them what's on the table, realistically. Yep. Yeah. And how this is going to come together.
Yeah.
And you're not going to lie like that. This is on the table when it's not. And right. Then when you're halfway down, be like, oh, well, that wasn't true.
But this is when we talk about value to a client, this is what's hard to articulate as value. Like, most people, when they sit down with an agent, they look at like, oh, well, you do like,
what are your
you
numbers?
Know, professional photography, and oh, well, you've sold these houses and you're going to do this for me. You do all of the open houses yourself. Like, I promise you the skill of being able to navigate these situations and putting clients at ease and making them feel comfortable and confident that you can do everything. There's way more value in that than me sitting at an open house on a Sunday from 12 to 2. That's a job for a newer agent. That's not my job. My job is to do this. Mm-hmm. And then equally negotiate when it's time to negotiate, because the complexity of this is very similar to the complexity of negotiating multiple offers or presenting offers and having relationships and the conversations that you have. And, you know, what is the actual PDF of the offer look like? Do you put a cover page? Do you send a bomb video at the beginning? Like, that's similarly, when you talk about this like web of different directions and putting a puzzle together, that's almost in every aspect of what a highly skilled real estate agent does, that's the value and benefit, not the actual like opening up the door at a house or sitting at an open house on a Sunday or putting a sign up or taking photography. Like, all of that is just procedural. The value of the real estate agent that you get is the understanding and the knowledge to navigate these situations. Give the client the confidence, because if you're confident in the real estate agent or whatever provider, think about a car. Like, you go into a repair shop, most people have very low confidence, and so they always question it. Do you have to do this? Is it being overpriced? All of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But have you ever had an auto shop where you know the person and like you don't question when they tell you what stuff needs to get done? Mm-hmm. I have that. Jamie down at Car Care Pros here in Mansfield, I'll bring my car down there and I'm literally like, you don't even have to call me and tell me what's wrong with it. Just fix it, because I know that you're going to do only what's required. And if there's an optional thing that's not required, you're going to call me and tell me, you know, what level of confidence you are in just doing this preventatively. And I have a lot of confidence. So then the stress of making a decision is the weight is like lifted. Mm-hmm. That's what I do for clients. That's mm-hmm. what I do for buyers. And that's what I do for sellers. I reduce the stress of making decisions and I give them the information so that they can make a decision that's best for them and their family. And the decision that they make is entirely theirs. But I'm going to give them the confidence to know that the information that I'm relaying is what I truly believe and based on my experience.
And you understand it.
Yeah, and I understand it. And then the cards will play out like they play out.
I think you summed it up great. Like, someone was sitting down at a table and they're sitting down at a puzzle and it seems very overwhelming, but you've done the puzzle forward, sideways, backwards, and up, down. And you're like, this is going to be, yeah.
Do you know what's funny? That's why my family hates puzzling with me. Nobody in my family will puzzle with me.
Why? Because you're like...
Because I know what the most efficient way to puzzle is. And it's okay. Hard for me to puzzle.
It's a puzzle.
No, it's not. It's a task to accomplish, right? And so with me, when you puzzle... Get all the outside pieces.
Oh my gosh, you're just like Paul.
You put them in one particular area and then you sort by color and then once you have by the color, then you put the outline together and then you start doing individual things and then you fill in all the rest of it.
So you don't just start rogue.
No. But what's funny is that so Colleen and my kids and Jack, they all love to they start in a corner. Yeah. And then they just look around for a piece until they find this specific piece that they're looking for. And I come by the puzzle and it's just sitting out and I'm like, and then I start sorting it.
You're doing it wrong.
But but then if I sit down and start puzzling with them, they'll like get up and leave.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's what you do for clients. You say, these are the pieces and I'm confident.
Yeah. But the big difference is that my clients want me to do that for them. My family doesn't want... They're like, you take all the fun out of puzzling. And I'm like, yeah, that's because puzzling's not fun.
It's a job to be done.
Yeah, it's a task to accomplish. And you have a start and you have an end and then you feel really good at the end.
And that's what your clients experience mm-hmm. when they
Yeah, hopefully sell. We make it a little bit more enjoyable than my family puzzling. But
getting up and leaving the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even this conversation made me feel more confident. Like that it's not so complicated. It's not something you can't figure out.
We do it all the time.
And I wanted to bring up too, you always have a backup. Like, you know, you always have like, if this doesn't work out, we're going to redirect and we figure it out. And, you know, if you accept an offer, you let number 2 and 3 and 4 offers say, hey, if this isn't working out, I heard you the other day, you're going to be my first call.
Yep.
You don't leave it done. Like, well, the door is closed.
I'm keeping relationships alive.
The door is never closed.
And again, those things are all articulated and described to my client so that they fully are aware. So like when we go under agreement with a house, you know, there's various different contingencies between home inspection and financing and the sale of a buyer's home and, you know, how much they're putting down and what agent they're working with and, you know, sort of like the number of different factors that are involved. And what we talk about is the risk of each particular contingency or factor when we're determining what we want to do. And sometimes there's like, it's an easy decision. It's like, well, that's a cash offer that's $50,000 above everybody else. And, you know, it's like an easy decision. It doesn't mm-hmm. even make sense to talk about it. We still do, but it's a quick conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the nuanced stuff when you've got, like this past weekend, when we have three offers at the same exact price and two of them have, you know, home inspections waived and the other one has more money down and one has, you know, and then you're like, there's not a clear decision, but a decision still has to be made. So here's the risk. Here's the potential worst case scenario. Here's the best case scenario. And then if worst case scenario happens, here's what I'm preparing for right now.
Exactly. What I hear too is you have these complex situations and it's not that things haven't ever gone wrong in the way you thought it was going to play out and you thought this piece was going to fit here and it wound up not. But you just say, but we're still going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, there are options. And I know them.
We've had deals fall apart where initially on the surface, and this kind of goes back to just my general belief of life that you never really know whether something is positive or negative in the moment. It may seem like a positive or a negative in the moment that it is, but you don't really know what the intended outcome of the entirety of the situation is. So worst case scenario, deal falls apart. Oh my God, that's terrible. Well, we come back to two buyers and because they missed out on the first time, now we get them to compete against one another again and they drive the price up higher than they got the first time. Okay, so terrible outcome turns into the best outcome, right? Like, we don't actually know. And that's what goes back to, I am unattached to the outcome. I'm going to do everything in my power to help my clients accomplish their goals. I'm going to educate them so that they can make an informed decision about what they want to do. I don't have control. I'm not buying the house. It's not my money. I'm not the other agent. I'm not the buyer. I can't control the outcome and what they do, but I can guide my clients the best as possible. And then the outcome is going to be the outcome. And whatever that outcome, the deal falls apart, if something catastrophic happens, then that's the outcome. And here's where we are now. And here's what we're going to do.
Redirect. Yep. Yeah. You stay seated at the table mm-hmm. until it's done.
Yeah.
Till all those little colors are put in the right spot.
Yeah. And everybody walks away from the table.
Yeah. And you're there mm-hmm. alone.
Just sitting there by myself puzzling.
You're just like, Paul, he agrees. Corners, mm-hmm. edges.
Yeah. Do you have a puzzle table?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The board.
Yeah.
You gotta with the drawers.
With the drawers. You have to.
Yeah, I should link that in the description.
Serious puzzlers. Serious puzzlers only.
Yeah. Beyond the deal.
Yeah.
See? The web.
The web.
I loved it. That was great. I feel more confident for when I need to.
Let's buy and sell then, right? Yeah. Ready? Let's go.
All right, I'm ready. What are we financing?
Let's do it.
I'm like, Paul, let's go.
Hey, we just have to experience this, Paul. Let's just buy and sell for the shit of it.
I'm confident. He's mm-hmm. so confident. I'm confident. Mm-hmm. But no, that was great. So thank you.
Awesome.
And well, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate everybody following along. And, you know, if you find yourself in this scenario, as a buyer or a seller, certainly reach out. We can sort of guide you. If you're not in our area and you want to get connected with a top agent, certainly let me know. We have a network of great agents that we can refer you to. And lastly, if you're a real estate agent, you know, this is some of the information that you need to learn. And proximity is power. And if you're around agents who have this knowledge and this skill set, it can be absorbed. And so put yourself in situations, watch this over and over again. If you have interest in getting connected, certainly let us know and we'll set up a time to chat. But as always, appreciate you guys for following along and have a great day.
We'll see you soon.
Peace.